This is the Gear Patrol Podcast. In this episode, I talk with senior staff writer Tanner Bowden, who covers outdoors and fitness products for Gear Patrol. Tanner has written in depth about a small subset of the product world, vegan shoes, and why almost no vegan shoe can be considered even close to sustainable, even though they're often marketed as such, using a deceptive practice called greenwashing. He discusses here what that means exactly and how environmentally conscious consumers can avoid getting duped. Tanner also shares a few other tips and tricks along those lines, advances in environmentally conscious shoemaking, and even suggests specific products to consider when you're looking for your next responsible shoe purchase. I really appreciate you tuning in today. If you like what you're hearing, I hope you'll subscribe to the Gear Patrol podcast, and while you're at it, review the pod too. Tap those 5 stars so that more folks can join in on the conversation. But now it's time to get the lowdown from Tanner. I'm Nick Caruso, and I'm glad you're here. Let's get started. Can you tell us what exactly your beef substitute is with vegan shoes?
Yeah, and I'll just say too that the idea for this article came to me, and I started thinking about it just because I had noticed in my email inbox just a proliferation of product pitches with for vegan shoes. Essentially, it just seems like everybody is making vegan shoes now, and it was always coming at me through this lens of sustainability. And then when I started digging into it, I kind of found out that it is definitely not as simple as if a shoe is vegan, it is therefore a sustainable, good product for you to buy if you want to live a low impact lifestyle. It's absolutely not true. So my beef with vegan shoes is that part of it, not the animal welfare part of it, but the sort of faux sustainability part of it.
Yeah, you make that distinction. It's sort of two sides of the same coin. Like I mentioned earlier, veganism as a philosophy and lifestyle is both of those things. But in terms of the environmental considerations, this is kind of BS a lot of the time. And you say, there's a quote I want to read that says, nearly every vegan shoe comes with a message that it's greener and better for the environment. End quote. But you say that's greenwashing, which is another term we may repeat today. So can you say what greenwashing, if there is any more to define what that is, and why vegan shoes in particular fall victim to this sort of marketing?
Yeah. I mean, you kind of hit on this already, but greenwashing is essentially just sustainability marketing. But it's more of a nefarious way to cover up non-sustainable practices. And it's rampant. It's everywhere. And you see it a lot with vegan footwear because footwear is just an incredibly impactful, sort of wasteful industry and product category. So it's exactly this kind of thing that's just ripe for companies to kind of try and make you feel better about all your shoes.
Right. So why is it, what do vegan shoes claim to do, and why is that problematic?
Right. So yeah, I mean, vegan shoes, most of it just, it's very shallow in how they're sort of claiming it to be sustainable. Essentially, they just say it's vegan, so therefore it's sustainable. And that's kind of the end of that, because a lot of us associate veganism with sustainability. Or just a sustainable lifestyle. But the reality of it is that when you replace the animal products in shoes, which are typically leather is the big one, and then fur, as well as some glues and adhesives also have kind of animal product components to them. When you replace those, what are you actually replacing them with? And the answer is, most of the time, you're replacing them with petroleum-based products, like PUs and PVCs that are essentially just plastic when you kind of boil it down to a very kind of straightforward thing.
That's plastic. It's oil. We're taking oil out of the ground, which means there's, like, you know, all the environmental byproducts of that practice, let alone just the sort of, like, definitely non-biodegradable materials that it produces, which is, of course, you know, killing fish and choking off environments around the world. But you also said, mentioned that companies go even further than that. It's not like you're just wearing plastic shells on your feet. They feel like leather too, and there are chemicals that do, you know, that are applied to achieve that sort of feel.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And this is one part that kind of, like, reminded me of my experiment with vegan eating, in that, like, a lot of recipes and things I was trying is sort of like trying to be a vegan version of a real thing, like vegan cheese made of cashews, stuff like that, where it's like, you can tell it's not really the real thing, but the goal is to get as close to it as possible, like, and make you think that it's the real thing. Kind of like Impossible Burger. That's a great example of this sort of, like, vegan mimicry, or plant-based mimicry, I should maybe say. And it's kind of the same thing with these materials that they're using in a lot of shoes, where they really want to make, like, petroleum-based fake leather look and feel as much like real leather as possible. And a lot of times that does involve, as you said, like, adding chemicals and solvents to it to make it more pliable or softer or textured or whatever it is.
Which outlines that it's just, maybe it's just really, really difficult, kind of like your experiment personally. Maybe it's just really difficult to make a truly sustainable product. This is the token podcast car reference from me, is that it's like electric and hybrid cars, which have batteries in them. They save, you know, they save gas at the pump and they emit less on the road, but there are chemical batteries inside these things. They're massive, that have to be disposed of when they wear out. And that's eventually harmful. So,
yeah.
There's a difficulty there, but there are brands who at least acknowledge that, which is a leading statement, but there are brands who acknowledge that, and I'd invite you to talk about one of them.
Yeah, definitely. So that's the EV analogy is a great one, I think. But yes, there are brands that do acknowledge upfront. They rely heavily on, you know, marketing their vegan footwear, but they kind of explicitly say that this is not sort of the end-all, be-all solution to, like, you know, typical leather shoes. And one of them that I believe you're referring to is Olukai.
That's correct.
They have a lot of leather products to begin with, like leather sandals and shoes. So for them to begin producing vegan footwear is a big thing. And they mention in a blog post on their site, and I'll just read the quote. I'll let them say it. They say, it's important to remember that animal-free shoes are not always more environmentally friendly by default. It is a lengthy and contentious debate as to whether leather production or synthetic production is worse for the environment. And then they also say, though, that generally vegan shoes are considered to leave a smaller carbon footprint than typical shoes.
That kind of transparency really outlines that what we're getting at is that there's a lot of consideration to put into this purchase if this is the road you want to go down. So I find it impressive that a company would be that transparent. We're doing it, you know, but you're not going to like it. So are there other companies? I know we're going to talk about Patagonia in a second.
Yeah, Patagonia is certainly the big one that comes to mind. Their sustainability practices are just, like, front and center. Sometimes you'll go to their website and there's not even a product on the homepage. It's just like an article about regenerative organic cotton farming or something like that. so they are very active, and I think they are probably the peak of that. Yvon Chouinard, the company's founder, is very vocal about his misgivings about the fact that he created this, you know, $1 billion clothing company, and the impact that has on the world and the environment. And mm-hmm. so I think that very much stems from him and his sort of like inner conflict that he has with this thing that he's created. But yeah, certainly Patagonia has a wide range of blogs and articles that talk about their production processes and how they're trying to improve them and all the little things that they're doing to make each product just like as incrementally more sustainable as possible.
And now, a quick ad break. In your piece, you also talk about a specific product by Patagonia, this boot. It sort of speaks to both sides of this save, like animal cruelty in a way, and sustainability. It's kind of a use the whole animal mindset. Can you talk about that, the work boot by Patagonia, and like what, how it does relate to this whole conversation?
Well, I guess first, you know, I should have just mentioned that Patagonia admits that no product is sustainable. No, doesn't matter like how much recycled content is in it, or like whether it offsets CO2 emissions. Like if you're making a product that is not sustainable, and it will have an impact. But I like this. It's called the Wild Idea Work Boot. And to me, this is kind of the best product example of like a really nuanced take on footwear sustainability. And I have to say, it is not vegan. So it's a leather work boot made from regeneratively farmed bison skin, essentially. And these animals, the Patagonia has already been contracting with the farm to produce bison jerky for its food line, Patagonia Provisions. And essentially right. what it's doing with this boot is using the hides, which are kind of like, before they were doing this, maybe like a waste byproduct of the food mm-hmm. production. And now they're using it to make a boot. They tan the leather in a more eco-friendly way than maybe the more harmful methods that some people are familiar with that use like heavy metals and nasty stuff like that. They tan it with olive leaves, like vegetable tanning, which some people maybe are familiar with. It's just like mm-hmm. a less impactful way to do it. They're repairable, so if the sole wears out, you can get them resold because the way they're built. And you know, another aspect of it too is that they're not trying to sell as many of these things and make as much money on these boots as they can. They're only making as many boots as they have this bison leather to produce. So as soon as they're sold out and the leather stock is gone, they're gone. But then once they get more leather, they'll make some more. And it's kind of like it's kind of antithetical, I think, to how a lot of brands are probably thinking, you know, about products. The idea is kind of that you want to sell a bunch and make money on them, but this really isn't that.
Right. So that's actually a point that I was going to kind of make. I mentioned the use the whole animal mindset, which was, you know, has been a part of cultures and lifestyles since long before we started industrializing every inch of the globe.
Sure.
I know you mentioned a couple other companies who are not just making products that are aimed at sustainability and low carbon footprints, but also materials out there. You mentioned mm-hmm. vegan leather, but there are other materials. Can you touch on those? Because we've actually talked about them on the podcast before.
Yeah. So yeah, I mentioned kind of the bad vegan leathers, but there are good vegan leathers too. There's a bunch of kind of natural materials based leathers. One, there's like an apple based leather. There's a pineapple based leather. It's stuff like that. And one that I really like is, and I think is the most promising of these, which have kind of historically been, to go to your back to the car analogy, a pineapple based leather handbag is kind of like the concept car for the like vegan leather world. But there's this new interest in mycelium based leather, aka mushroom leather. Mycelium is like the sort of stringy fibers that connect mushrooms and plants underground. You could go like dig around in the forest and find mycelium fibers. This company who we have talked about before, Bolt Threads, who they're busy trying to make things like man-made spider silk. They have a material called Mylo, which is a mycelium-based leather. And they grow this fungus in like a giant warehouse in an undisclosed location somewhere in Europe, I believe. And it's just, I have seen a photo of the inside, and it's just like racks of kind of like weird white mushroomy looking things in a gigantic space. But yeah, they use it and they can somehow they turn it into leather, and it's like supple. The texture is closer to the real stuff than the PU bad stuff we talked about a second ago. It's like got a good feel to it. It's supposedly easy to work with for the actual footwear designers too. I think this one is the most promising kind of leather alternative that we're gonna see in the near future, because I believe that this year some brands will finally be coming out with some products that use this Mylo leather.
Okay. Yeah, interestingly enough, you say we've talked about Bolt Threads before. This is very strangely the second podcast in a row where the word mycelium has come up. I think that's a very strange fact. And if anybody's listening regularly, I'm sure you were taken aback. Yeah, truly shocking. I know. But yeah, Bolt Threads is so cool. They're just like racks of strange futuristic fibers in an undisclosed location. Sounds like Wakanda. It sounds like they're just making like the Black Panther uniforms down there.
Totally.
Am I right that the mushroom leather is being used or was used by Stella McCartney? Am I conflating two different things from your article?
No, you're right. You're right. Yeah. Stella McCartney has like sort of founded her brand on, you know, a more sustainable version of the kind of like high-end fashion industry. And yeah, she's one of the early adopters of this mushroom leather, along with Adidas is another one, which to me was kind of an unlikely, you know, gigantic sportswear company to be adopting this kind of cutting edge sustainability stuff is admirable. And I am certainly curious to see how it comes to fruition.
Pull all the threads together, all the mycelium fiber together.
There you go.
If you are pursuing vegan shoes, you may need to think twice about what you're actually getting. It's tough to satisfy both animal cruelty concerns and environmental concerns in a product like this. Even though you'll see these, you know, vegan shoes are available all over the place. You mentioned in the piece that Zappos has a filter, and you can, you know, you filter your shoes results and you get hundreds of choices. And brands like Olukai make products that are vegan, but are at least transparent about it. And we've got Patagonia, who's making stuff that's a little more sustainable, if not vegan. So If a person wants to pursue vegan ideals in their products, in their shopping, but they want to avoid what we're talking, the greenwashing, sustainability marketing that may be dubious, what do they do? Like, what are you left with? Are there specific products, tips, tricks? What do you got?
It's hard. It really is. I think that's kind of like the first thing you have to understand is that it's antithetical to the way that we want to buy things, because there isn't a kind of like a kill switch easy way to just all of a sudden convert your purchasing habits, but wear purchasing habits into like a more sustainable version. Because really what it requires is just like being more mindful about how you shop and how you look at products. You know, you have to you have to consider the brand that's making the shoe. What kind of brand is it? Is it a big brand or is it a small sort of mom and pop brand? Are they producing, like, if you can even find this information out, are they producing thousands of pairs of this vegan shoe, or is it more like the Patagonia one where it's a limited run and then it's gone? For the greenwashing conundrum, like, is there marketing about the sustainability of the product kind of like upfront and in your face in a way that makes it feel like they want to make you feel good about it? Because that might be worth questioning if it does mm-hmm. seem like they're trying to convince you of something, which is the job of marketing. Or is it kind of just like there in the product specs? Like, hey, by the way, this is vegan. A lot of these companies that actually are sustainable, quote unquote sustainable, because none of them are, they'll have a lot of their efforts and the information about their efforts somewhere on their website. Usually if you scroll to the bottom, you'll find like an about us, something maybe like their technologies, maybe one just solely dedicated to sustainability. That's a good one. Another thing I wanted to bring up is that there is a more recent certification that has come out called Climate Neutral. And Climate Neutral, okay, it's a nonprofit, but it's also like a certification and a label, kind of like certified organic is on food products.
Right.
So it's like right on the hang tag of products from brands that are certified climate neutral. And essentially what it is these companies undergo like a measurement of their carbon footprint, and then they mm-hmm. essentially purchase carbon credits to offset their carbon footprint so that they're a net zero carbon emissions company. And if people are wondering what carbon credits are, because they are kind of like almost like NFTs in a weird way.
that, yeah, they're kind of nebulous. Yeah, that's true.
Yeah. But it's essentially that one carbon credit, you can buy one and it equals one ton of CO2 emissions. What your money is actually going to are these sort of like CO2 offsetting activities like reforestation projects or energy efficiency projects, sustainable agriculture practices, like all kinds of things. Waste management is another one. But yeah, so these companies are essentially able to like figure out what their footprint is and then just kind of buy it away. So they're net zero. So that's actually one that I like, because it makes it easier in a way that hasn't been around before, and that you can just see on the hang tag, like, okay, here's a pair of shoes,
right?
Climate neutral, okay, like that's a good one to look for,
a good start. Yeah, and that kind of ties in perhaps to a product you'd mentioned to me before we started recording, which is this, which you actually talk about in the story too, but Adidas and Allbirds, to sort of give it away, are pairing up.
Yeah, absolutely. And Allbirds is like a certified climate neutral company. Adidas isn't doing the same certification, but they're working on neutrality by 2050, I think, which, I mean, they're mm-hmm. just absolutely gigantic, so it just takes longer. But yeah, the shoe, you know, Allbirds has always been about sustainability in making their shoes, and they teamed up with Adidas with this goal of making a piece of footwear with just the lowest carbon footprint ever. And so the sort of like average carbon footprint for a standard pair of shoes is like roughly 13.6 kilograms. And they were aiming for like 2 kilograms is kind of the goal that they set for themselves. And they actually just revealed information about this release. And it's called the Adidas Allbirds Futurecraft Footprint Sneaker. And it has a carbon footprint of 2.94 kilograms. It's made out of like sugar cane and recycled polyester and another fabric called Tencel, which is made from like wood pulp. And even like the packaging is a non-standard shoebox because you have to take into account the packaging too and how it's shipped. And yeah, so that's out now. They're going to like raffle off the first 100 pairs. And then I think there's going to be a more of a limited drop later this year and then a wider release in 2022.
There's your tip, everybody. You can maybe make your own shoes out of what you have in your backyard. You can thrift for some. You can find companies like Patagonia making boots that are more sustainable. Or you can enter a raffle and be one of the first to own a shoe that has the longest name of any product that's ever been made.
They probably could have reduced the carbon footprint even further if they had shortened the name. Would have saved some ink.
I was going to say, yeah, save some ink. Exactly. Well, I think they deserve some credit anyway. Some carbon Definitely. Credits. That's a ton of information and hopefully, you know, really helpful for anybody listening who's interested in pursuing this kind of product lifestyle. Am I missing anything you want to make sure we pop in at the end?
The only other sort of tip I would say is just buy used stuff, buy used gear, whether it's at your local consignment shop or there's a ton of brands now that have set up these like online used gear stores too, like REI, right. Patagonia, North Face, Arc'teryx. There's a ton of them now. Mm-hmm. So just buy used stuff because that's always, always, always going to be a more sustainable purchase than buying something new.
Yeah, for sure. Aside from maybe shipping and the little bit of electricity used in processing your purchase, that's a big savings. Good tips mm-hmm. all around. So thanks for taking the time to educate me and go through all this stuff. I've got some shopping habits to change a little bit. Everybody else, thanks for tuning in. I hope you're subscribed to the podcast, but regardless, we want to hear from you, particularly about this topic. We wonder if you have a favorite truly sustainable shoe or brand or just product in general. Do you have anything to share about vegan products and the difficulty or ease of pursuing them? Or the lifestyle in general? Do you have questions for Tanner? There's all sorts of things you can write in with. And there are a few ways to get in touch. One, you can leave comments and questions in a review of the podcast wherever you're listening to it. If you do leave a review, I'd really appreciate you clicking those 5 stars while you're at it so we can jog the algorithm and get more people listening. But otherwise, reach out to us on social media, on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Our handle is Gear Patrol. That's one word. Or you can email me directly at podcast@gearpatrol.com. And I'll make sure to tell Tanner that you either complimented or insulted him or just have a question for him. But I really do want to encourage everyone to reach out with those questions and comments. So please do. Tanner, thank you for your time today. It was good chatting with you.
Yeah, likewise, Nick.
And everyone else, thanks again for being here. I'm Nick Caruso. And until next time, take care.